Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jeff, I told you I know what buttons to press.
let's make sure that we're actually live here. Someone in the chat, tell us so you can hear us and see us. See if Jason did it right.
We did it.
We are live. Welcome, everybody, to the February 2024 First Fridays live podcast stream here. Thank you to the couple people in the audience so far that are joining us. We have been chatting prior to hitting go, making fun of Jason mostly, which has been fun for me.
It's the right move. I just want to say I approve of that action.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm great. You've had some time off, which is good. Recharge the batteries. You're fully disengaged from the markets. I am plugged the F in. I know everything that's going on and I'm pumped about it. Actually, I'm mostly just high on caffeine because I had a big Starbucks.
Yeah, I was away for a few days, so I'm trying to get my head back in it. Eric in the audience, I did get your email. We're gonna respond to it. I was just a little swamped with getting stuff done before I went away, and then I just got back last night. So all right, before we get rolling here, Jason, we have to do a ad read. We're gonna do an ad read live, which will be super exciting. So we'll do it quickly. This is for our sponsor, public.com, which you may have heard us do ads for them in the last couple episodes. It's on our banner. There's a banner on our icon on the podcast apps. So Jason, hit it.
Hey, Investing Unscripted listeners, you might know public.com as the all-in-one investing platform. Now they've launched options trading, and with it, they're doing something never ever been done by any other brokerage before. Public is sharing 50% of their options trading revenue directly with you, the customer. So whenever you trade options on Public, you get something back. And of course, there are no commissions or per contract fees either.
That's right. And by sharing 50% of their options revenue, you'll know exactly how much they make from your options trades because Public is literally giving you half of it. In other words, it's a more transparent approach to options with no fees, and you get something back on every single trade. So go to public.com and activate options trading by March 31st to lock in your lifetime rebate. This ad is paid for by Public Investing. Must activate options account by March 31st for revenue share. Options not suitable for all investors and carry significant risk. Full disclosures in podcast description, U.S. members only. All right. With that said, what is new, Jason?
So it's earnings season. So there is a ton that you need to catch up on, Mr. Santoro. But what's new since we did our January First Friday live stream? The big thing, and it's funny, in pre-planning, neither one of us came up with this. We're officially in a bull market. The S&P 500 broke the previous all-time high, which was like, I don't know, 2 years ago? It's a substantially, it feels long. But it really wasn't long. And I want to talk a little bit about like those kind of going through those bear markets and like the top peak to peak kind of where historically where that fits in.
Yeah. Does it feel to you like we're in a bull market? I guess some days it does to me, but I think because the last time we were in one, it was that crazy time in 2020 and 2021 when everything was going up and NFTs and crypto and all that craziness. And this is like a different feeling kind of bull market. It seems like there's a little less mania, even if there is some high valuations out there, but it seems a little different to me.
Yeah. It's the first time I'd ever heard this phrase, and it wasn't the first time anybody said it, but Ben Carlson does the Wealth of Common Sense blog and works at Ritholtz Wealth Management, does, Animal Spirits, I think, is the podcast that he does with one of the other Ritholtz guys. Called it, you know, a wall of worry, right? The market always climbs a wall of worry, and I'm one of those people that I've talked about it before, Jeff. Like I'm always expecting a recession within a year. Like I literally always feel that way. So I never feel like I'm in a bull market. Like I never really feel like the animal spirits pushing me. I guess most people probably do. Cause like, if you look at like the data around like interest and activity, it's always high when the market hits an all-time high and it stays high around those periods. So, you know, people love a winner. And I think that carries over to stock, the stock market too.
Yeah. I think the other thing I've been thinking a lot about, and anyone who's in or near retirement is probably going to be mad at me for saying this, but having looked back at 2022 now, and this is always how probably everyone feels in hindsight, I wish I had bought more stocks then. So there is a part of me that's like, you know, I wouldn't mind a little bit of a pullback here, so I could, you know, add to some of the positions in my portfolio that I think are a little bit out of my reach right now, or maybe add some new ones that I've been having on my watch list, but I still think are a little bit too expensive to initiate a position in. I think that's the benefit of being still a decade or two away from needing that money, is it's okay to root a little bit for a pullback. I say that with all, you know, with all the understanding that if you're looking to retire or about to retire or just did retire, you're probably cursing my name right now. But it's just, it's only on my mind because I've only been through a few of these like up and down cycles as an individual stock investor. So it's on my mind thinking about what I'll do next time there's a pullback in terms of what stocks I buy.
Yeah. A couple of like quick little data points on like peak to peak period. So like going through the bear market and then finding out you're back in a bull market when it actually gets back to all time highs, that's kind of the recognized, you know, the market's been going up and it's broken an all time high, then it's considered a bull market. You know, we've for people that have been investing since before 2008, this is the third pretty significant bear market. This one was really painful because it wasn't just stocks, right? The S&P was down more than 24-25%. The NASDAQ 100 got crushed, right? Got crushed. Like this is the worst the NASDAQ 100 got hit since you got to go back to the dot-com crash. The Dow took it on the chin, but also fixed income, commercial real estate, like everything was bad. Crypto, I mean, everything, like all the asset classes were really, really brutalized. And like by some measures, you know, that 2022 period, like that was the worst. I mean, that was like the worst downturn in history. Like if you look at all the asset classes combined, but if you look at the, and it feels like it took forever, right? And they, to a certain extent, they always do, except for the pandemic, right? The peak was February 21st, whatever that Friday was, February 20th or 21st. And we were like peak to peak in less than 9 months, right? Yeah. It was within one calendar year. And that is incredibly rare. We saw the fastest sell-off and then the fastest recovery. Then you go back to the financial crisis, Jeff, and it was like 5.5 years from that October 2007 peak. And the bottom was March 2009. And then to a full recovery, it was 5.5 years total. And that was on the longer end. So this one was maybe a little bit longer, but still relatively average in terms of how long these downturns happen. And to me, the big lesson is like, you're talking about the FOMO. It's like thinking about like having a framework. This is where dollar cost averaging or always buying can pay off, because you don't get so caught up in trying to make the perfect price and waiting for a better price because you missed the perfect price and you feel like you have to wait for it to come back. It doesn't always come back, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's why I'm happy that as we were going through that 2022 downturn, I was still buying every week. So I was, you know, forcing myself to make a decision on a weekly basis. I basically was, you know, which is the same thing that happens in my retirement accounts, right? That come out of my paycheck. I don't decide what day or what time those get purchased. You know, now that I've kind of changed my strategy and I'm not buying as regularly, I have to be, you know, just a little bit more aware of what I'm doing whenever we do hit another downturn. All right, before we get into our first topic of conversation here, let's go through the chat real quick. We have a couple comments. So Teo asks if we've had a look at New since it was mentioned last. He's pretty excited to see the earnings and their 15% annual savings account. Interest rate is putting our public ads to shame. So, well, I disagree with that. I would never say a bad thing about a sponsor. But I've not, so I'm curious if you know this company at all or much, because I've seen it, it's getting talked about more and more, you know, around the internet. And it's not one that I've ever really
looked. I believe New Bank.
Yeah, I know a little bit about them, but I've never really looked into it.
Teo, I apologize. I know I'm pretty sure that I told you I was going to take a look at it. I haven't, which I'm ashamed of, because I've taken a significant interest in banks over the past couple of years. And mostly I've stayed in the U.S. I really do need to take a look at it. So no, I haven't, and I'm sorry.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Fair enough. So Ken, I think Ken wins the comments. I think we just have to go ahead and shut it down in terms of quips. Ken said it was either public.com or privates.com. You chose wisely. Well played, Ken.
Yeah.
Well played.
Agreed. We did choose wisely. John, I see your comment here asking about Outset Medical. I plan on talking about them a little bit later in another segment that we have coming up. So I'll hold my thoughts on that for a few minutes. But Jason, he also asked about your thoughts on Berkshire and asking if we're going to be at the annual meeting in Omaha this year. I don't think I'll be able to make it to Omaha. It's not a great weekend for my family. And I sort of ignored some important family things last year to go. So I don't think I can swing that 2 years in a row. I don't know about you, Jason, if you're planning on going, but regardless, what are your thoughts on Berkshire at today's prices?
I'm 50-50 on the meeting. First of all, I want to try to go. There's a couple factors that are up in the air that depends on whether or not I'll be able to. I need to make that decision quick, start lining up airfare and all that sort of thing. I think it would be number one, it's always fun. And to me, a lot of the fun is just spending time with other maniacal investors, right? You don't get a group of like-minded crazy people on this weirdo thing that we all love together very often, right? So that's always a lot of fun. And if we can talk Jim Gillies into going, that's worth the price of admission right there.
True.
Just Jim's stories are great. The other thing too is just the fact that I'm of two minds, where either there's going to be a massive reduction in the number of people that go, or maybe a record number of people that go with Charlie Munger dying towards the end of last year. And part of me thinks that maybe it's more people, just because it's like, guess what? These dudes are old and they're really not going to live forever. And now it's like the slap in the face that Warren Buffett is a gift that we're not going to have forever.
Yeah.
If you ever want to see Warren Buffett in person, even if it is in a 30,000 people arena and you're sitting, you know, 1,000 feet away, you basically have a very few number of chances left, right? Maybe only one more, maybe only one more.
And that was the whole reason, I think, for you and I both, we were so interested in getting out there last year, kind of feeling like this won't be the last one, or this could be the last one, and it ended up being the last one for Charlie. I'm interested to see when they give out more information about the meeting, if they're going to change the structure of it at all. You know, the past decades have been an all-day Q&A, basically, and then a shareholder meeting with Charlie and Warren on stage, sometimes joined by other people, but essentially just the two of them doing their thing. And I feel like a full day of Warren Buffett answering questions with anybody else is going to fall flat. And I feel like he's smart enough to know that. So I'm very curious to see if they change the length of it or the timing or the structure in some way to make it feel, you know, purposefully different than what it was, so that no one has to feel like they're, I mean, imagine being whoever gets to sit next to Warren Buffett and kind of fill Charlie Munger's shoes. Like, that's impossible. Right. So I don't think I'll be able to make it, but I'm curious to see, you know, how it shakes out and how it goes.
Well, in the second half this past year, it was Greg Abel, who's been named as the successor. He's going to replace Buffett as CEO when that change happens. And he's been there 25 years. He came over in, I believe, 98 or 99 when they acquired Mid-American Energy. That's now kind of the core of Berkshire Hathaway Energy. So he's been there for forever. But, I mean, he is typical CEO speak. Super good guy. Great. This is a kind of person you want taking over this business. But no, I mean, again, there's nobody's Charlie Munger, but he's more of just a typical, you know, kind of staid, controlled executive. And Ajit Jain also was on stage taking some questions. Of course, he runs the insurance business, ran the insurance business for a long time. And he can be funny, right? He's got great quips and tells good stories. And he's got really sharp wit. I could see him playing an important role, but I agree, Jeff. I feel like they're going to have to change something.
But I would guess if they're going to put someone on stage with Charlie or have someone out there longer than they normally are, it makes sense to have it be Greg Abel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, cause at some point, if they're going to continue to do a meeting or a shareholder, you know, the full meeting or a shareholder meeting,
he's going
to
be the face of the
company.
He's going to
be the, right. He's
going to
be the one doing
it, you know?
So
yeah,
it makes
yeah.
sense to get him out there, get him some reps.
I'm going to make a prediction.
Go for
Jeff.
It.
My prediction is that somewhere along the lines, Warren and Charlie both recorded a video that's locked in a vault somewhere that they're going to run. That's basically, hey, I'm Charlie. I'm dead now. And right. It's going to be funny. And
I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised.
Heartwarming and poignant and all that kind of stuff. I'm hoping that exists. And honestly, going to the meeting just on the chance that there's going to be that, because that's like, they don't let that stuff get out. It doesn't end up getting broadcast outside of the annual meeting. Like that's, they try to make it really exclusive in that way. That would be worth seeing.
Yeah. Agreed. I think Cena had an interesting comment here, just talking about bull markets and bear markets. He said, I think my exuberance for a bull market is lower now than it was in 2020 because of the 2022 drop. I feel more guarded now than I did before. I completely agree with that. 2020, 2021, I didn't know what I was doing yet. And I was just buying anything that was going up. And I look back and made some valuation mistakes back then. And I'm almost, I don't want to say I'm gun shy, but I'm maybe heading towards gun shy right now. You know, I sort my portfolio by total return sometimes. And I find myself just avoiding the top half of it because that's where like Nvidia and Apple and who else is up there? You know, these big tech companies that are hitting all time highs. And I'm just like, nope, I'm going to leave that alone right now and maybe revisit right. during the next bear market. Mm-hmm. But I agree with that scene. I kind of feel the same way.
Well, and I'll say this too. A lot of investors are going through that started kind of in the same period of time that you guys did and have talked about. And part of it, yeah, was, I mean, just the crazy volatility that we're seeing, where days where the market would move high single digits one way or the other. And that's, you know, not normal. I'd never seen that sort of extreme volatility on a consistent basis that we saw in 2020. But I will tell you this, that same experience of like feeling so driven to do something, my first 3 or 4 years as an investor, it was constant. Like it was constant to the point where I've talked about this before, Jeff. I went on a 17-day vacation to Europe with my wife and a cousin that I'm super close to and his now wife. And like after a couple of days, my wife told me, she's like, you have to stop trying to find internet to check your portfolio. No, I'm going to leave you in Amsterdam and go on the rest of the trip and you can't be around me. Like it was that. And you know, I got home and my account was fine. Everything was fine. It was no big deal. Right. And it's a good way to remember, like as a long-term focused investor, if you're owning good businesses, if there's a single event that happened on a single day that tanked your thesis, well, you screwed up in what you bought. Right. So It's normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Teo's got an interesting comment here too. I'm getting to a point where I should add to my winners some 10% of my portfolio, some 2-5%. It's sobering on the positive side, looking at the low cost basis as, well, you can buy now and it's no big deal. And on the negative thinking, it's so expensive. It really sells you on the importance of not staring too hard at that cost basis. Thoughts on that?
Sounds like reading it too. To go ahead, you first.
No, I was going to say, to me, it's that price anchoring thing, right? Like that's the first thing that jumped out to me. And this also gets to, you know, I've talked about it on the podcast, but this whole thing I'm sort of thinking through right now versus like, I used to like to try to buy always at better valuations, which is easier to do when the market is flat or going down. And it's harder to do when it's in a crazy bull run.
Yeah.
Cause you end up in the 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 months between purchases, because you're waiting for that better valuation, you could have missed out on dozens of percents or hundreds of percents in gains. So I think adding to your winners is harder than maybe I thought it was.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, price anchoring is real, right? It's hard to push against that. On that same episode we were talking about, Jeff, I used Trex as an example of how over about an 8-year period, three different investments that I made, and every investment that I made was at a better valuation, like markedly better valuation. But I think my opening investment was like $4, and my investment 8 years later at a better valuation was in the 70s, right? So the stock was up, what, 10 times, 15 times, right? It's a substantial difference in returns. And to me, the key is when you start thinking about those sorts of businesses, those multi-bagger businesses, yeah, you want to buy on better value points, but really what you're looking at is like SoFi as an example. I believe it was Teo that mentioned that in the comments too. SoFi is cheaper now than it's ever been on an earnings valuation, because they've never been profitable until the last quarter. I like buying on the better valuation, but really what I'm looking for is signs that they're executing on the business, right? So deploying more capital over time is they're earning more of my capital because they're actually doing the thing that they're trying to do. And you're seeing that being demonstrated maybe in better value points, even though the stock price has come up. But it helps keep me from looking back at that low price and saying, you know what? I should have bought a lot more back then. It's like, you know what? Let's rewind to the price and what was the business and what were the unknowns that kept me from deploying more money, that now I feel comfortable enough to buy the business because I feel comfortable in the quality of the business. They've demonstrated they can make money, et cetera, et cetera.
One thing I've tried to do when I think about the phrase add to your winners is try to broaden the definition of winner to be something more than price appreciation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's also the case that, you know, if you look at the way the business is going, everything, you know, they're hitting on all cylinders, so to speak. And maybe you do buy it at a higher valuation or a similar valuation. And I think as long as it's not a insanely overvalued valuation and you have plenty of time and if it's a newer company or a younger company, that helps as well. You know, we've talked about this before. In certain instances, you can sort of wait out your valuation mistakes, you know, with certain companies in certain situations. Not that you should make them because of that, but, you know, I think where I've landed is not to let my pendulum swing too far one way or the other, right? Not to rush in.
Hey, this is a family friendly show. Don't talk about swinging your pendulum on here, buddy.
Not to go too far towards the direction of buying immediately and filling out a full position, and also not going so far the other way where I buy the same company once every 7 years.
Right, right. There's a balance there. You know, there's a balance there. And that's interesting, right? Because like one of my frameworky things that I try to do is think about not getting too caught up in buying shares just where I feel the most conviction. Because a lot of times it can just be the same company over and over again. Sometimes you have to just think about diversification too.
Yeah.
I like Teo's comment here, Jeff. I'm way more expensive now than I was 5 years ago. I'm not.
No, you're losing value every day. All right.
Depreciating asset.
Jason, depreciating asset haul. Jason's like a car you just drove off the lot. All right. So it's earnings season. We've had a couple of our large tech friends report in the last week or 10 days. I'm curious, because I was away and you were plugged in, as you said, what has stood out to you so far in earnings season? I was happy to see Amazon's results. That was a nice little pop, since that's a stock I own and is in my portfolio. But as someone who's paying a little closer attention over the past week than I was, I'm curious what your initial thoughts are here as we're early into earnings season here.
So SoFi, I'll talk about SoFi. I've already done some videos on our YouTube channel. Go check those out. I've got another one that I think is going to run Sunday. Maybe actually I'll probably set it to public tomorrow. But that we've known they were going to report a GAAP profitable fourth quarter for a while. Word got out that that was going to happen, and they did. It was 2 cents a share, so not it was like $40 million or something like that. So it's substantial amount of like actual profitable dollars. And they're saying they're going to earn 8 cents a share in 2024. So the trend is continuing, which is really, really good. But the big thing is they put a guidance out there going all the way to 2026. So that's three years, all of this year plus the next two. And they're calling for earnings per share between 55 cents and 80 cents in 2026. So if they hit 80 cents a share in GAAP earnings, stock price today is like, I don't know, 10 times, 12 times. Or I haven't looked at the stock price today. But that's pretty cheap considering that they're still growing revenues. I think revenue like 33% this year, and they're anticipating 20 to 25% continued revenue growth, average annualized revenue growth from here. And that compounds into a lot of profits, right? When you have a business like that scales, they don't have to build a new bank on every corner in every market that they want to enter, right? These internet banks get extreme operating leverage. Axos Financial is one that reported that really demonstrates that. Their efficiency ratio, which is a measure of the percentage of the revenues that cover operating expense, is in the 30s. It's in the low 30s. You look at the big banks, they're like 50 or 60, right? So twice as much of their revenues have to cover operating expenses. And that's just a way that these digital only banks can really, really just, there's so much, and they're worth higher multiples because they're more profitable because of that. The difference with SoFi and Axos and some of these others is SoFi, like so much of their book right now is those personal loans that are unsecured. It's higher up the risk profile. The reward side, they get a 6% net interest margin. I think Bank of America's was like 2.9 something. So like double the profit margin on their lending book, but you don't have a house you can repossess or that somebody knows they're going to lose. So they're more likely to keep making that payment. So if we do see an economic downturn there, you know, there's risk there that you don't have with the big banks and that you don't have with Axos.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, maybe you already answered it. What can, if you had to give the bear case or something to be worried about or keep an eye on, is that the biggest risk you think to the business? Just that the unsecured loans present a level of risk you don't see with the big banks?
Yeah. If we do have, a pretty marked recession, economic downturn, like we've already seen a lot of job losses in tech and that kind of thing, right? That's been hit. And that's actually kind of like their target demographic is people that earn a lot of money and have very high FICO scores, right? That's like what they want to do. They were started in the Bay Area as a lender. Like they wanted to be like a, like pooled lending where it was like crowdfunded lending for student loans. That was like their first model. Obviously that's changed over time. But the thing is like, if we see, and I don't think this will happen because they've really become very diversified in terms of their deposit base and their borrowing and their borrower base. But think about like Silicon Valley Bank, like they were so concentrated in tech companies. That's why they blew up. If they're too concentrated in like the cohort of who their borrowers are, and if a lot of those borrowers are also depositors, then, well, people don't have money. So your deposit base gets hit and now they're not making their loan payments and you don't have an asset you can go repossess besides somebody's credit score, which is not worth any money to you.
Right.
So that's the downside risk. Or, and that's like the worst case scenario. There's something in the middle where they're not as good at origination and managing credit risk as we think they are. And they just make bad loans and their default rates go up, but it doesn't look like that's happening. They could grow this business a lot faster than they are, but they're not, they're being mindful about how they grow it.
Yeah. And that's something we learned in our conversation with John Maxfield several months ago, that basically, you know, good banks don't grow as fast as they can for that exact reason. So,
right.
So one of the headlines I noticed as I was kind of heading back from vacation was Meta's earnings, which just by the stock reaction for a company of that size would tell you that they were you know, at least made the market happy. But the big thing that I didn't know, and you told me because I wasn't paying close of attention, that sort of shocked me, and I still don't really know how I feel about it, is the fact that they instated a dividend.
Yeah, yeah. It's a small dividend in the scheme of yield, 50 cents a quarter per share. That's $2 a year. The stock's over $400 after today. So it's like a 0.5% yield. That's like when Microsoft first started their dividend too, right? It's like it was a very super low yield.
Apple's is still pretty low too.
Well, Apple stock's done so well as part of that too. But like these are companies that are still growing the dividend pretty fast, right? And I think there is a very good chance that they do follow that track record of that path of growing the dividend at a pretty quick rate. I like it. Teo's weighing in here that he likes it too. I will push back a little bit. Teo says the meta dividend is a really, really good idea. It keeps Zuck from melting the company on the metaverse. Here's the problem.
They're still going to melt money on the metaverse.
They are. They're expecting the operating loss in their Reality Labs business is going to increase this year. It increased last year. So last year was the year of efficiency. The operating loss at Reality Labs increased by $3 billion roughly, and it's going to increase again this year. So they got too efficient by getting rid of people doing other stuff, right? They cut their headcount by like 25% last year. They're saving money by reducing staff there. They're saying they're going to have to hire again. They've reached a point of attrition where they have to start bringing people on. So they're not cutting back there, right? They cut back in other places.
Yeah. And Jen added in the chat that she likes the dividend because she thinks it forces some fiscal discipline, which is an aspect of it that I hadn't thought of, but I think that makes some sense.
Maybe. I mean, it should. It absolutely should, but it's TBD. I do think the business is at a level of maturity where it makes sense. See, there's that word, mature. But I do think like they're in a phase where they should do it. You think about when Apple instituted their dividend, you think about when Starbucks did, these other companies. The difference is that it's much accelerated for Meta because it grew so fast. It got to this very big scale really quickly. But you think about like the cadence of a business, it makes sense. Here's the thing though. A lot of it's going to be predicated on what the ad market does.
That's my big worry.
And so there's really three things that happened for Meta that made this such a good year. Cutting back on expenses and a big chunk of that was from staff reductions that we're really going to see the full year benefit of it this year because they had like $3.6 billion in costs related to the restructuring. Those costs are spent. That money's gone. But that's one thing. The other two things, the ad market bounced back. Total ad impressions increased 20-25% for the full year. And we're starting to see a recovery in ad rates. Ad rates were up 2% in the fourth quarter. They were down for the year, but they're starting to get better. And engagement was up. Average daily users across all of the Meta apps was up 8% at the end of the year, 7.8%, over 3 billion, almost 3.2 billion users. They call it daily active people. And then the monthly metric of that was like 3.8 billion. It was almost 4 billion people. So you see engagement go up and you see the ad market get healthy and the cash cow grew an extra teat, as it were, Jeff. I mean, it was pretty substantial.
All right. So here's my question. When is Google going to implement a dividend or Alphabet, I should say?
I don't know. They should have already.
Yeah.
They should have. So yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good answer.
All right. Well, then we'll move on to the next thing. So what companies are you looking for? Like, are there any that you're specifically looking forward to, you know, reporting in the next couple of weeks? I have a couple on my list, but I'm curious what you're looking at.
I always want to hear from CrowdStrike, but they won't report for a while.
Yeah, they're one of the last ones.
I think next week we've got, what's the other cybersecurity company you and I both are big fans of?
Fortinet?
Yeah, Fortinet, I think, reports next week.
Yeah, they're sooner.
Soon. And I don't think the markets love their results the past couple of reports.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that. It wasn't top of my mind, but now that you said it, I'm actually very interested in seeing how they do, because yeah, both of the last two earnings results, I believe both of them resulted in 20% drops. And I think warranted to some degree. I mean, it wasn't a cheap stock. Even during 2022, it never got really, really cheap. And even after those big drops, it was still on the expensive side, I think for good reason. I mean, it's a great company. Does, you know, its results were, even with the drops, were more about, I think, valuation related than business related. I mean, yes, they were going through a tougher time, but there's no reason to believe it would, the business is in danger or anything like that. I think it's just the regular cycle of how things go. But it will be interesting to see if they, you know, disappoint the market again, if we'll see another huge drop or if some of that's been shaken out. So yeah, that's a good one to keep an eye on.
Brookfield Companies. So I looked at Brookfield Infrastructure today. I think they did really well. I haven't looked at the others, so that'll be maybe some weekend reading for me.
Yeah, I don't follow Brookfield anymore. I used to own which ticker is BIPC? That the
Brookfield Infrastructure.
Infrastructure. That's the one I owned several years, or not several, a few years ago. But then I sold it because it was too. It made my head hurt trying to understand what they did. So I'll jump to Outset Medical now because John asked about it earlier. I think if I had to like look through my whole portfolio and pick one company that I'm most interested in earnings, it's got to be Outset because, well, and we've talked about it a lot already. I won't go into incredible detail, but prior to that like 1 or 2 month span last year where they had just awful news one after another. There was the news about Ozempic being good for kidneys, and then there was news about, then they pre-released results saying that the stop sale on their one version of their device was impacting their revenue more than they expected, and then they reported and it dropped again. But prior to all that, and this is one of the reasons I picked it in the portfolio contest last year, they were pretty bullish on 2023 being a year where in the second half they would really see some improvement. And I think they just got delayed a little bit. I hope it's a delay and not a derailment, but I just cannot believe how much the stock continues to fall. I think it's down another
40. It's down 46% so far this year.
I don't get it. So, but this is an interesting topic I want to talk through with you because this is where there's the part of me that says this could be a incredible buying opportunity if this company ends up being a big winner, or the market could be right and this is a company that's going to not make it, and you never know until you know. And this is where like the imposter syndrome of being like a newer investor and also not really being an expert in anything, but especially the medical device industry. So I keep reading results and I keep reading 10Ks and 10Qs and press releases and looking at their, you know, what they say. And it does really just feel like they're in a rough patch. But when the market is this unanimous in how it feels about the company, it's hard not to think you're wrong and you're the one who doesn't get it, you know. And then a year or two from now, I could be kicking myself and be like, why didn't I buy when it hit an all-time low like every week? So I don't know. What do you, not specifically about Outset, but I'm curious what you think about that whole kind of dilemma.
So generally, I think this is just, it's a textbook example of it can't get much lower, right?
Well, I thought that at the end of 2023, well, and then it dropped another 40%.
That is exactly my point. You know, never buy a stock because you think, well, it's already down.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It can't possibly get any. Yes. Zero is a possibility for every company, right? The probability is what you're trying to figure out. And this is one where I think a couple things are happening. Part of it, Jeff, is because they have kind of had these struggles, and it's affected their ability to ramp sales, which generates margin dollars, which helps pay the bills and helps offset cash burn. Is they're probably going to end the year having burned $170 million. In free cash, which is basically going to leave them with about 1 year of cash left on their balance sheet. So I think part of it too is there's the product, right, which seems wonderful and all of the potential that it has, but But then there's the realities of being a business, and the stock's down this much. It starts to become like a self-fulfilling prophecy where it's like, okay, the stock's less than $3 a share now. We're burning through money. We need to start thinking about bolstering our balance sheet. How do we get money? Interest rates are up. We're not generating, nobody's going to give us good terms on
right.
debt.
Yeah. Regular interest rates are up and they're not going to get good interest rates on top of that. Right.
Right. And then the other side, you have investors saying, well, they're going to have to raise money. I'm going to get diluted. I'm going to sell. And it drives the stock price down even more. Right. So it becomes like this vicious, brutal cycle that can undermine a business, right? It can undermine the viability of a business. And the next thing you know, they're either taking a bad deal, they're diluting investors a ton just to raise capital, or they capitulate and they find a buyer. Right. And you know, that's just kind of the realities of business. And I mean, that could be what happens. That could be what happens. So
yeah,
here we are.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, and there's, and I look at the results and like, you know, in at the end of 2021, so in Q4 of 2021, their gross margin was 12%. In Q3 of this year, or, you know, the last reported quarter, it was 24%. That's a huge increase for gross margin over less than 2 years. But on the flip side, they're just as unprofitable and just as cash burning as they were 2 years ago. So like they're getting this enormous, you know, top of the income statement improvement, and it's not translating to profitability at all, which yeah. says that they're just, you know, their operating expenses are still bonkers. So,
right. Well, they're having to increase sales and marketing expense and things like that now that they yeah. have a product out there. So Teo says Airbnb, Shopify, Redfin will be interesting reports. I agree. Lemonade, definitely one I want to see. You know, are they finally starting to figure out the insurance originating part of the business?
Yeah, I'm interested in Lemonade too, because it if I remember correctly, it popped pretty good after the last report. And they actually got their loss ratios pretty much in line with competitors, at least for that quarter. Yeah. And so it'd be interesting to see if that was like a positive blip or if they can sustain that. So I think I agree with you. That's one that I want to keep an eye on. What about Disney? So Jen brings up Disney. They're reporting next week, and that yeah, she's right. They're always entertaining to read the comments after that one. I'm curious about Disney as well. I had a very, very tiny amount of Disney stock, like maybe $300 worth. And I sold it a couple months ago in my effort to consolidate my portfolio. But I'm not bearish on the company necessarily. It was taking up too much thought for me. So I couldn't bring myself to put more into it. And I couldn't bring myself, I just sold it and figured there's plenty of time to buy back in if I feel like they've turned the corner. But I really do feel like they have a chance to turn this whole thing around. I'm curious, what do you think?
Yeah. In the past, I've called Disney an own forever stock, and I don't believe that anymore. Based on the way it's performed over the past 5 years.
Last time I looked, you could go even over a longer time frame.
Maybe 6 or 7 years now. I mean,
it really hasn't done.
They have a management problem. I mean, that's the bottom line is that when your CEO leaves, and longtime CEO who was a driver of the success for the business leaves, his handpicked successor comes back to replace his handpicked successor who just mishandled a good number, was too operationally focused and not focused maybe on the right parts of the business. And like his tenure keeps getting stretched out longer and longer to kind of stay around. That's troublesome for me, right? I mean, you look at other companies that have had that CEO leave. That's basically like the CEO that made the businesses that existed, that left and then had to come back and then left again. And what a lot of times you see are really great businesses that have to get through a hard patch and earn investor confidence before they deserve any more money. We saw that happen with Texas Instruments. John Templeton left, right? He had been there since the late 90s. He took over in like 02 or 04, really, really got the business just nailing it and then left close to a decade ago. There was some scandal with his handpicked successor, came back, stayed for the better part of a decade, and then left again about a year ago. And the business seems like it's really doing well. Starbucks is one that's similar story.
I think what I struggle with Disney is I could see both scenarios turning out when it comes to management. I could see Bob Iger riding the ship and Disney going on a great run for the next couple years or however long he wants to stay this time. And then I could also see the exact opposite dysfunction, you know, getting too caught up in suing the state of Florida or being sued by the state of Florida, like all that stuff. Like, and I that's what I mean about, like, it was taking up too much mind share. I didn't want to think about it anymore. It wasn't a big enough position in my portfolio to really make a difference. So I just decided to kick it out and kind of watch from the sidelines.
I think the biggest problem that Disney's dealing with right now that wasn't an issue for Starbucks in the previous periods and wasn't an issue for Texas Instruments is, think about the state of the entertainment industry right now. You've got movie theaters in North America that are going through a secular decline. I mean, there's growth in China and other markets. You think about the linear TV business. ESPN was a cash cow for 15 years, right? So they spent all that money to build a bigger movie studios business, all those big acquisitions. And then they acquired Fox. It's increased part of their linear TV business. They divested some of that, sold it off to others, but like it was part of their linear TV business. And you think about ABC and you think about ESPN, those businesses are going through painful, painful contractions right now as they're trying to build out this streaming business, which is a wonderful product that hasn't started generating economic returns even to support itself, much less offset the losses in cash flows that are coming from those former cash cow businesses. And sure, as Jen points out, Parks done really well. That's really going gangbusters right now. But that's also the most operationally intense part of the business too, right? It's hard to get that right and keep that going.
But the way, so here's the flip side of that whole equation though, right? If you take a big step back and forget the management stuff for a second and just think about what the last 4 or 5 years of this company have been like, it's insane.
Yeah.
Right? Like the pandemic crushed them completely, right? Shut the parks, shut down the cruises. They launched a streaming service at the perfect time in some senses, but then also had to just light cash on fire to sort of keep up with the Joneses. And now they're trying to dial that back. But when you look at what they have a world renowned, known quantity parks business that I don't think can be matched anywhere else.
Agree.
They have probably the second strongest streaming service and probably one of the ones that will survive when the inevitable consolidation of all the other ones happens.
Yeah.
And
they're starting, I'd say really they have two of the three most powerful because of Hulu, right?
Well, and then I was going to pivot to that next. Like they also have Hulu, which I think is actually really valuable and could be a big winner in where people land when they cut when everyone eventually cuts the cord and cable.
Right.
Mostly right. Or completely dies. And then they have, you know, and they have the incredible amount of IP with the streaming services that they need to get the cost structures figured out. And I think they will. I mean, the Disney Plus has been around for not even 3 years, 4 years, right? And in end of 2019, it launched.
Yeah.
And then the last thing, I think ESPN is still something can be done with ESPN to make it profitable again, I think. And it just feels like they need to sort of cut the cord on the cable stuff and just go full into streaming, even if it, you know, cannibalizes or kills some of their business in the short term. So like, I mean, this is what I mean. There's so many things you could say like this, 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 and this, and they'll be fine, but will they execute? And how long will Bob Iger be there? And is he the right person? You know, it's tricky. I mean, if you own it already, and you have a big stake, I wouldn't sell it.
I love a turnaround, Jeff. And I've been very tempted. I've been very, very tempted to buy. But I want to see some signs that like, not just the market has turned and like the things are working, but the leadership is really, that's a big question mark for me. I mean, I was a big Bob Iger believer, but you know, you got to have somebody in place to be the next person. And they've really struggled with that.
Yeah. All right. Last thing I wanted to talk about as we wrap up here, last couple minutes, we talked about companies that maybe we're worried about or want to keep an eye on or interesting earnings. Let's flip this. Let's flip the script here. Is there any company in your portfolio that you think either are expecting or think could have a really strong quarter as they all report here in the next several weeks?
I'm hoping STEM has a big quarter. I'm not convinced that they are, but I'm hoping they do. So they do like utility scale, commercial scale batteries, and then their software overlay. Renewables have taken a hit. It's been tough, but like I'm optimistic that they're going to show, because they talked about they were going to be free cash flow positive this in the fourth quarter. I really want to see them in the year on a strong note with cash generation, because they spent a ton of their cash from going public on some acquisitions and stuff. And they've got to get their operating statement generating cash flow, because their balance sheet could be a lot of trouble. So fingers crossed that STEM's going to deliver. And I'm optimistic that we're going to see something positive from Lemonade. And one more, we've already talked about Lemonade, so I'm not going to talk about it anymore, but one more, I'm really optimistic. Boston Omaha is going to deliver results that we're going to be happy with.
Yeah, I was going to mention Boston Omaha. I mean, the fact that Sky Harbor, which they're big shareholders in, is doing so well and their stock isn't, is that alone makes me scratch my head. I don't know that I would say I feel confident that they'll have good quarters, but I'm hopeful after seeing some of the results with Meta and also Google to some extent, that the ad market is back a little bit. So I'm hopeful that I'll see good results out of the companies I own that have exposure to the ad space. So The Trade Desk and Roku, and I guess maybe even like Etsy to some degree, selling ads on their platform. But you know, as I look through my portfolio, I have more companies that have exposure to ads. I mean, even Amazon, they just reported. I didn't actually look close enough to see how their advertising segment did. But that's a group of stocks that I own that I'm hopeful and semi-confident will have good ends of the years. Yeah. Jen says she would have bought alcohol to this party if she knew this one was that Boston Omaha was going to be discussed. That's another one that I just can't... It makes me feel like I'm missing something. Is there some piece of this that everyone else sees that I don't see? But there's enough people, I think, that you and I know, Jason, who are still really, really bullish on the company, that I know that's confirmation bias, but people smarter than me make me feel like we just need to hang in there.
Yeah. No, and I think it's reasonable when it's people you trust and who you know have the chops to really analyze a business. You know, I don't think that's necessarily so bad. Teo, I just want to say, I see what you did there with your comments about Disney, Star Wars and Marvel running those franchises into the ground. This is not the way. Well done. I want to say one thing, and I think that was part of the reason Iger came back, is because Chapek was so focused on operational efficiency, they weren't letting the creatives in the studio's business really do their thing. And that's why we ended up with a lot of, and honestly, a little bit of like the quality issue started under Iger's initial tenure. But I do think that's been a big thing they've really been focused more on in this second go round with Iger, is letting the creative people do great things with content.
Yeah. And I've heard a lot of people complain that they, in their rush to get series out, especially in the first year that the service has launched, I mean, it seemed like every, you know, as soon as one Marvel or Disney series ended, you know, the next week, the next one would start. And as someone who has two kids who love Marvel and Star Wars, it was great. Like, it gave us a lot of stuff to watch together as a family. But even by the end of it, even my kids were starting to like lose interest, because I think the storylines were not even compelling for kids, you know, like even though the action was there and their favorite characters were there. So yeah, it's you have to not tarnish your brand. But on the other hand, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of how Amazon, you know, Amazon kind of had to double its footprint in 2 years like it did just to keep up with demand. And I feel like when you're launching a service and then all of a sudden there's a pandemic and everyone's locked up at home, I understand the pressure to pump out content on the front end. But you can't do that forever. You know, it's just not sustainable. So they have to figure that part out.
We got about 5 minutes left here. So if anybody else has any last minute questions, please Please get them into us. We will definitely take a minute or two to answer them.
And while we're waiting to see if there's any more other questions, I want to quickly hit our housekeeping that we didn't do at the beginning. So just a reminder to everyone, if you're on this link, you are listening to this live, you probably know we have a newsletter because that's how we sent the information out. But if you're listening to this later or watching it on YouTube later, check out our newsletter. You can just go to investingunscripted.com and punch in your email address, and you'll get a weekly newsletter from us and also the transcript to all the regular podcast shows.
Yes, we realize those of you that are watching this live already subscribe, but we're going to publish this on the podcast stream. So We want those people that didn't see it live to figure out how to see it live.
Exactly. And the other request is, if you're listening and you are enjoying the show, giving us ratings on the podcast apps and writing reviews on Apple Podcasts is incredibly helpful. I've noticed that on the weeks where we get a lot of reviews and ratings, we actually start to show up on some of the podcast charts, which means more people are seeing us in their feeds and checking out the show. So, you know, we really appreciate everyone's help, and we're trying to grow the audience as much as we can.
To respond to Teo's comment, the investing portfolio contest is looking great. I'm already looking at my moonshot portfolio and scratching my head why I didn't put this or that stock there. I will tell you right now, I think there are better than even odds that somebody who is an audience member who built a portfolio ends up actually winning, which I think would be incredibly fantastic if that happened. Jeff, we're going to do a full review of it. Well, a full mini review, since it's only 1 month, when we record of one of our podcast episodes next week.
Yeah. So the show that comes out on this coming Wednesday, so the 7th, 8th. Yeah. The 7th, whatever that Wednesday is.
March 7th.
We're going to do a quick January review of the 2024 portfolio. It won't be super in depth for two reasons. We're trying to keep the monthly reviews short and make the quarterly reviews a little bit more in depth, but also there is a ton more stocks and portfolios to talk about. So we just can't fit them all into any one episode, even if we wanted to. But I will say this as a teaser, two things that I think are interesting. One is that I believe, at least looking at it, not doing the actual math, the audience page is whooping the guests. Yeah, a lot more green on the audience page than on
Anna Marie Lamb is right now is winning.
Yep. Yep.
And second is Mitch Fatel, who picked a penny stock, which is awesome.
So it's a YouTube viewer and a comedian are in the early lead.
That's so awesome.
I love it. I love it. And the other thing that I think is worth mentioning, I don't know why I feel like I should bring this up, but Jason is absolutely getting destroyed. It's early. It's only a month, but it does bring joy to my heart.
It's bad too. It's bad. I'm down 24%, people. Down 24%. Yeah. Only dips, only buy dips. So that's what's happening.
So we will share our thoughts in more detail on Wednesday's podcast.
Jeff, big weekend plans? What you doing this weekend?
It's a lot of like catching up on the normal things of life since we were away this past weekend. So
That's exciting.
Things like laundry and grocery shopping and obviously preparing for our wonderful podcast and newsletter and all those things.
Obviously. Teo says long weekend in Mexico, Monday off work. Good for you. Enjoy that off. It was leg day today for me, Jeff. So I will spend tomorrow not being able to stand. So that's mine.
All right. Here's my final question before we sign off here.
Okay.
What's your Super Bowl prediction?
I'm going to predict that, Tay-Tay is going to take over the halftime show and, she's going to tell everybody to vote for Joe Biden.
Oh, so you're reading all the conspiracy theories.
honestly, I don't know. Who's going to have the best commercial is really all I care about, because I don't really care if the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm not super. I don't really care who wins the game. I would have. I'll say this. Had Detroit won, I would have been 100%. Massively rooting
I'm
for the Lions.
Completely with you there. I agree. I got some friends that are big Niners fans, so I kind of feel like I'm pulled in that direction. The Chiefs, they've won their fair share. They won a couple in the past few years. So Teo asks how much I squat. Not nearly enough is the best answer that I can give you. It's the best answer. About one Santoro. I'm thinking. Yeah, 1.5 Santoros. So Okay. All right. I'll read us out here, Jeff. This was fun. We did it.
We did it.
We did it. We did it for a full hour, too. I hit the buttons right this time. As always, just a reminder, Jeff and I absolutely love answering your questions, giving our thoughts on these hard investing topics, doing it in real time with our best favorite listeners, except for those of you who are listening to the recording, because you're actually really our favorite best listeners, not the people that are on the live stream right now. With that said, it's up to every one of you to figure out your answers to those questions. We can give ours. Yours are yours. Own it. You can do it. I believe in you. Jeff believes in you. Jeff, we'll see you next time, buddy.
See you next time. Thanks, everyone.